CMO Roundtable,
the podcast where we talk to CMOs and marketing professionals to find out what's working, what isn't, and how you can leverage their expertise to improve your marketing and conversions. Now, let's welcome our host, number one best-selling author and co-founder of Conversion Fanatics, Justin Christensen.
All right, welcome everybody. This is your host, Justin Christensen of CMO Roundtable. And today, as always, we have a fantastic guest. And I'm actually really excited about this episode because I believe our guest can solve some of my problems on her particular area of expertise. But our guest today is the author of The Boomerang Principle, Inspire Lifetime Loyalty from Your Employees, is an entrepreneur and CEO with over 20 years experience building positive, high-performing work teams that get a lot done and have fun at the same time. Fun is something we absolutely love to do here at our company, but a highly sought-after communications expert, well-known for her business-building acumen and insights, she is recognized for her practical solutions to big problems. She's the founder and CEO of Double Forte, a 15-year-old national public relations and digital marketing agency headquartered in San Francisco, California. And she works with consumer technology and wine brands, splits her time between San Francisco and New York. So Lee Caraher, how are you doing today?
I am great today, Justin. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for being here. And I've got my yellow legal pad out here ready to take some notes and hopefully we get some.
Let me take a drink then.
No, it's just always something, and I think this is a very hot topic. I know I get it a lot in my circles, you know, and it's something we have constantly struggled and tried to refine in our business. You know, being, you know, we're only a 3.5-year-old agency, and an agency model was very new to us coming from our previous background. So,
right.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts and philosophies on some of this, but let's get started with one thing. I know your recent book, you've got a couple of them, but your most recent book is The Boomerang Principle. What is The Boomerang Principle?
Right. The Boomerang Principle is that belief that companies and organizations that allow and invite former employees to return to them have a strategic advantage over those that don't. And in my book, I show you why and how, and then I give a blueprint on how to actually put a boomerang principle to work inside the company for long-term sustainability.
So let's go into that a little bit. So how do you create like a boomerang ready culture?
Yeah. So a boomerang ready culture is one that is ready to receive people to return, right? Mm-hmm. And until recently, really, over 50% of the companies in this country had a written or an oral sort of in the air policy against rehiring people.
Ooh.
And it's just recently that it's tipped over back, so less than 50% of companies have that policy still in place. But there still is a lingering sentiment that, you know, once you leave me, you're dead to me. And I think that is really unfortunate point of view. So the first thing you have to do is be ready to say, yeah, my company might not be able to maintain, or, you know, may not be able to contain a person who's doing a great job with us forever, but it should be able to have a great relationship with that person for their whole career, regardless of where they are. And there might be a time in the future where that person's career trajectory and our company's trajectory meet up again, and it would be fortuitous for both entities to combine again and employ that former employee. So that mindset is the first piece, right? And for many older people, boomers, I'm a boomer, I'm the last year of boomer. For those of us who have been around for a while, this is a new thing, right? Because the concept of you're dead to me, if you leave me, you're dead to me, is pretty ingrained in the boomer, in boomer people.
Mm. Yeah, good point. So you're basically saying don't burn bridges.
Don't burn bridges. That is excellent. You know, if this marketing thing doesn't work out for you, Justin, let me know. You get a job at my agency.
There you go. So, I mean, there's been companies out there like Zappos and things like that have really put I guess the attention on a company culture. So why do you need to have, you know, the power of your culture in your business?
Culture is everything. Culture is everything. And I say that because a positive culture drives profit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't have a business just to be all kumbaya, right? But if you have a kumbaya business, you are have less friction, you have more positive, more profit, and more progress. And so there's lots of examples of companies who are doing great, and the numbers are great, and they're terrible cultures. And I could name like 15 off the top of my head. But imagine if they actually didn't have all the waste that terrible culture creates.
Well, one of the big fish that comes to my mind when saying that is Amazon.
Amazon, Uber. Mm-hmm. I mean, I keep going on, right? So Imagine if you didn't have the friction between humans that bad culture is, and how much less time there would be grinding, and those people would not be grinding about their dissatisfaction, or they would have better lives outside of it, and therefore it would be fueling a more energized human on the inside. So culture is everything, and the more positive the culture, there's lots of different kinds of positive cultures. There's not just one, but the more positive the culture, the more opportunity there is in the business. And the more opportunity in the business, the more sustainable that business.
What are a couple ways that you could bring positive culture to a company?
Mm-hmm. So I think there's lots of ways to do it. But first is, leadership is everywhere, right? And it starts with whoever's in charge. And you have to be a leader that is willing to walk the talk and talk the walk, and not just be BS, right? So for a lot of marketing people like ourselves, you know, it's like we get accused of being slick, or that's BS, or that's a nice platitude, but it's not real. And the more we can be authentic to, this is who we are as a company, this is what we're here for, these are the rules that we're going to have, these are the values that we have, and that's the behavior that we will and will not accept. The more clarity you have around that, and everybody, and there's consequences for not staying within those behavior agreements, the better it is your culture, the better your culture is, the more positive it is. Hmm. So, the vision of why are we here, the reason you should come to work with us, and the behaviors that are lined up with whatever the values you have are, that's the first piece in terms of creating understanding around what culture, what your culture is and what it isn't.
Nice. So kind of a little bit of a transition, but mm-hmm. What do you mean by the next generation workplace?
Yeah. So the last generation workplace really was one with offices and steno pool, literally, typing pools. Mm-hmm. And that structure still exists in many places, right? Today's workplace is much more open. Maybe you're not allowed to talk to the CEO, right? But he's sitting right there. He's a cube. He's sitting right there. You can see him. So one is the physical barriers around offices have really gone down. The in terms of the idea of a 24-hour workday, that is with us, right? The 24-hour, those of us who work with teams all over the country and all over the world, work is happening all the time. And being able to manage a team that is in different time zones, in different countries and different languages, that has become more and more the norm. Lots of companies are using virtual assistants in the Philippines or in South Africa or in Australia, that kind of mm-hmm. thing, so they can get the benefit of overnight work, right? And large companies obviously are outsourcing thousands and thousands of people in other countries to do this work. So one is sort of this constant work for companies of one person and companies of 100,000, right?
Yeah.
And everyone has to even if you have a 9-to-5 job, which fewer and fewer and fewer of us do, you still have to be cognizant of that. Third is sort of this this fluidity around information. It used to be that we didn't allow people to have information. You're not on a need-to-know basis. In today's world, often our employees know more about our companies than we do, right?
Yeah.
And that really forces it a wonderful thing, right? This transparency. Those companies that can create that transparency for their employees actually have stronger cultures and less barrier. At the same time, there's more accountability on the employee side to act responsibly. So when you think about the future of work, right, it's one, what are the physical things? It means less barriers. It means more fluid time zones. It means coming in and out of work all day long. And we used to think about work-life balance as work and then life. And really, work and life today sort of go in and out of each other all day long while you're awake.
Yeah, and I'm not really sure where mine starts and where mine ends.
Well, and I think and workers, employees, people who have jobs, you know, they heavily identify with their work, and they want to, you know, it's a, you know, a resume becomes a badge of honor, right?
Yeah.
And being with companies that are where it's, you're proud to have been there, that is the new norm, you know?
Yeah.
And particularly the top 25%ers of employees that we all want. We all want that top 25% employee. You know, they have a lot of options. And so the more companies can create places where that top 25% chooses to work, the better we're all going to be. Rises all boats.
That's great. Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, we've got a very open, you know, we were very virtual for the first mm-hmm. couple of years. And last 1 year ago on September 1st is when we moved into our new office. And but we still have that kind of come and go attitude. As long as work gets done, you know, we're pretty lax and lenient on that element. Yeah. So I'm glad to hear that, you know.
I think there's still power in getting together, which is, I assume, why you got an office.
Yeah.
And so in my company, we have, you know, people can work from home 1, 2, 3 days a week. And mm-hmm. we have people like 4, now 5 cities, and sort of people go to clients all the time. But we really, Tuesday is the day everybody's at home. Tuesday, everybody's here or in the offices near them, whatever it is. We're all either on Zoom together or physically next to each other, because being together does generate great stuff.
Yep. Thursdays is our day here.
Thursday is your day, right. So, and then people have to plan around the right thing for the business, right? They just can't be wed to, well, my day is off on Thursday. Well, no, we have to be here on Thursday. So sort of getting that as part of your culture, once you lock that down, you know, the freedom to go to ballet at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and get all your stuff done so your team's not waiting for you to get back from ballet. Understanding all that stuff is really what good culture is all about. And it takes work, right? It takes work.
It indeed it does.
Cannot over communicate those things.
No, and that's, I'm glad to hear over communicate is kind of our company motto.
So, well, you know, it's so funny because I'm on everybody's alias, you know, as the CEO of this company, and I keep trying to get off, but he put me back on. And we have this sort of this thing, you know, if you're going to be out, if you know when you're going to be out a week ahead of time, you say, I'm going to be out this day, I'll plan to be, you know, I'll be with you. So by the time I'm going out, nothing will drop, and then there's a reminder 3 days beforehand, and then there's a reminder, and then there's the email before you leave, this is what's going to happen when I'm out, here's how you get hold of me. And that discipline is what allows so much fluidity in the workplace and so much work to get done regardless of where people are.
Yeah, those are great points. So I want to shift gears a little bit into kind of back to your original book, which is Millennials and Management. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk about millennials from the good, the bad, and the ugly side of it. But since that is making up such a huge portion of the workforce these days, how do you attract and retain millennials and even maybe some Gen Zers?
Yeah. So I wrote my first book after failing miserably at that.
Okay.
It was easy to attract them. It was terrible at retaining them, which was a body blow to me because I'd never been a person who lost people. I've had 100% failure in this. And, oh, my gosh, 100% failure. It never happened before. So There's a few things. One is, one is being clear on who you are. What is your vision? What do you do? Why do you work? All those things. Because people attach themselves to companies, people of all ages, not just millennials, attach them to the companies that are very clear about why they exist and why someone should wake up every day. So one, being really clear about that. Two, being very clear about each person's role in that vision. So, you know, Amy is an account executive and she's a creative, and her role in this team is to make sure that everything is beautiful and it's web ready or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. So a person's individual role, well understood by that person and well understood by his or her team. Right. So everyone understands how all the oars are pulling in the same boat, particularly because millennials really have this notion, a very flat world notion, that everybody can lead and everyone might lead from any seat in the boat. You don't have to be mm-hmm. at the head of the boat to lead. So understanding your role and understanding everyone else's role. Three is having an investment in each individual's career objectives. So this seems a little counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I going to care about it? You know, we have a job to do. Just do the job. Well, you know, in particular, millennials know that they will have many jobs over the course of their lives. They might have many careers over the course of their lives. And their parents and the economy has demonstrated that they should not count on a company to hold them, right? Even if the company is doing well. Because you can't plan. You know, if you're publicly traded, you don't know when you're going to get bought. You have no idea. So the idea that companies used to attract and retain people for long, long periods of time, and that if you just worked really hard, the company would take care of you, you know, that has been broken. So millennials know that they need to craft their own career, and they want to have as many options as possible, which might mean not staying in one place very long so they don't look stale, particularly if they're under 35. So when we understand this and we can say, so Justin, what is your goal? What do you want to do? Mm-hmm. And trying to match up that person's goals with as much of the company's work as possible with proficiency, not just proficiency, but mastery, that one keeps people in the company longer and gets them more productive faster and returns better value to the company. And then two, creates this symbiotic relationship with the employee and the company where, you know, I want to be a DJ. You let me be the producer of the podcast. You showed me all these. I mean, I worked on the podcast for 2 years. I did everything convinced with the podcast, but I really want to have my own podcast. And I want to make money out of it. Well, that's not in this company.
Yeah. Right?
I can't do that here. But I learned everything I needed to know. And I contributed to the company. I got it done. I'm going to go create my own podcast. That's what I'm going to make money on. But thank you so – you know, the thanks, right, is there. It keeps people in the companies longer. And then later, when that person's out in the world, today, everyone who leaves you can hurt you or help you. And if you can have person help you when they leave, and millennials are great at this because they're so connected, right? Mm-hmm. They don't make any move without talking with somebody else, unlike some of their older colleagues. Mm-hmm. Dude, you should go work for Double Forte, man. I learned everything I needed to know. I stayed there actually a year longer than I thought I was going to stay, but I learned all these things. They were great to me, and I think you'd have a great time. So those kind of, when you show that investment in somebody, those are the things that millennials are looking for. That, of course, you can't do that if you don't have a business, and the business has to produce.
Right? Yeah, no.
So the standard of work has to be high, which leads me to my last thing. The last thing is set expectations early, repeat them often, and don't let things fester. You know, there's a lot of the things that are negative if you Google millennials in the workplace. You know, they're not wrong. They're not wrong, but they're also not their fault. So, mm-hmm. We let people be wrong for a long time without confronting it and solving the problem. And if you don't set an expectation of you're going to sit here, this job, you're going to sit probably two or three hours at a time. And if you're just getting out of college, you probably not sat for 2 or 3 hours at a time. Unless you're on the couch watching television or Netflix or whatever, right? So just being really clear about what are the expectations? What does a deadline look like? What happens at lunch here? Yes, you have to clear your desk, or whatever those things are, and not letting people be wrong for very long so that you because feedback is such a gift and it's something that they expect. So those things all together make a company that a millennial will stay for, even if they didn't think they were going to stay very long.
Awesome. Those are, yeah, some absolutely amazing tips. So I'm going to throw you just a slight curveball.
Sure.
Since you're an author, I'm an author. I'm assuming you read a bunch.
I do.
So I want to say, if you had just a couple books that have really jumped out to you recently, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter what topic, I mean, business, personal development, whatever it might be, what are they?
I'll give you a couple. One is Hug Your Haters by Jay Baer. I think every marketer needs to read this book. Just so powerful about how to sort of tilt your head around how on customer service and how that can really drive your business so positively. Another book by my friend Nilofer Merchant is The Power of Onlyness. It's just come out about a week ago. And this is a book about how we all have superpowers. What are those? When we find them, how we're living on the world, and how we can be, there are things that only I can do, that only you can do in our world. It could be a world of three people, it could be a world of a million people, it could be a world of a billion people. But sort of owning your onlyness, such a powerful notion, and I really appreciate her book. Another book is Leeson Stromberg's Work, Pause, Thrive, and it's really about how to take a pause during your career and not get derailed from having a fulfilling and lucrative career. And that pause may look like stepping back or taking time off, and it can be for men or for women. So those three books are three that I would recommend to anybody.
Awesome. And that's part of the reason why I asked those questions is because not one of them have I read. So I will be going to Amazon shortly after this.
Awesome.
So my final question for you, and this has been absolutely a wealth of information, but if you had one tip for people with their hiring and business culture and just all of what we've kind of talked about today, what would it be?
Stay humble.
There you go.
You know, people choose to be to follow you if you're a leader. People choose to follow you. They don't have to follow you. The power of choice is strong. And the more we can, help people achieve their goals, it's about them, not us, right? Mm-hmm. We're only as powerful as our most able person. And our least able person has plenty of choice.
Awesome. So that's all I got for you. we could be here all day too. I have more questions, but we could be here all day doing it. So this has absolutely been amazing. I've actually got a page of notes.
Oh my gosh.
And so everybody listening, this is all of the information, the books, the recommendation, links over to Lisa will be in the show notes. But Lisa, or Lee, what is the best way for people to reach out to you?
The best place, you can go to see my books and my speaking and my agency, Double Forte, is at leecaraher.com, LeeCaraher.com. You can follow me on Twitter at @LeeCaraher or on Instagram, LeeCaraher. I'm very easy to find, LeeCaraher. You can email me at Lee@LeeCaraher as well.
So you're kind of out there then, you're saying?
I'm easy to find. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's why when people email me and they're like, "Dear Mr. Caraher," I'm like, I just delete the email because it's not that hard to find me.
No, it's not. In today's social world, it's pretty easy.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for being on the show. This has been absolutely amazing. So, folks, if you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, be sure to rate it, like, share, subscribe, do all of that fun stuff. If you like this episode and want to hear more of our episodes, be sure to jump over to iTunes and search for CMO Roundtable. And, be sure to rate us over there as well. That's all I got for you guys today. We look forward to talking to you again on another episode. So thanks, Lee, for joining us.
Thanks so much, Justin, for having me. What an honor.
Thanks so much for listening to the CMO Roundtable. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to rate us, subscribe, and give us a share. For more information about how you can accelerate your marketing results and to request your in-depth conversion analysis, visit conversionfanatics.com.